I know people are really busy running between committees, so why don't we start? This is the Rules and Administration Subcommittee on Personnel and Budget. Welcome, everyone. And on the committee, this is maybe our first, if not our second meeting, maybe, is Senator Sieben, Senator Gazelka. Welcome. I'm Senator Pappas, and joining us will be Senator Hoffman soon, I hope. And what we have before us today is to review and approve the permanent and temporary staff rosters and then an update on the NCSL salary study. So why don't we start with the rosters? Secretary Zoft. Does everyone have... here they are. Great.
Madam Chair, members, you have before you the two rosters, one for the temps, the temporary employees who work with us primarily just during the session, and then the second, the longer document, is the roster that lists all of the permanent employees for the Senate. The changes from that you would pick up from the last roster that was adopted by the Rules Committee last June have to do with new staff, departures of old staff, or I should say former staff, the additions of new staff, and there have been some promotions since the time of the adoption of the roster last summer. So that's what's reflected in the roster regular roster, and those are the permanent employees of the Senate. And then the temporary staff roster is the shorter document, and that lists all of the individuals who are employed by the Senate, typically, again, just for the legislative session.
Okay, I had a couple questions that I've been thinking about, and could you explain to us, Ms. Soff, what role does the MAC play in setting salaries, if any, and who is on the MAC?
Madam Chair, the members of the MAC would be each of the chiefs of staff for each of the caucuses, the human resources director, the director of council and research, and myself as secretary of the Senate.
What does MAC stand for?
Management Advisory Committee.
Okay.
We've had this committee in existence for quite some years, and I think the purpose of it was to have the staff take a preliminary look at recommendations with respect to most commonly it's with respect to personnel issues. We would consider many of the promotions within the job families. If there are proposals for changes in policy, we would review those and make recommendations. The MAC is strictly an advisory group. What I think the advantage of it is that we're developing a core of employees who have a good understanding of the personnel and management systems of the Senate and are able to be helpful if we achieve some continuity in the group with, maintaining some of the history and some of the policy considerations that have gone into personnel and other management decisions.
I know that NCSL is doing a salary study. We're going to talk about that in a minute, and that their salaries can be a work in process as a result. And I know you've been working on job descriptions, so that's good. But I did have some specific questions just on some rationale for differences. So, for example, on the first page, Kevin Lundeen is making 83-something, and Dan Mueller is making 96. And there's a $13,000 differences, and they've both worked here for 20 years. And they're both fiscal analyst threes. So are these the kind of differences that we're trying to get at, or, you know?
Well, Madam Chair, if you're talking about what we're trying to get at in the NCSL salary study, You know, I think we've been very clear that is just a study that is looking at market comparisons.
Okay.
So we're not looking at individuals at this stage. What the NCSL study was commissioned to do was to take a look at essentially our salary ranges for each position.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, over the last summer, the human resources director and myself, with the assistance of staff and supervisors, we wrote over 100 job descriptions so that they are hoping to be more accurate reflections of those positions. Some of them were quite dated, hadn't been looked at for many, many years. So we forwarded all of those job descriptions to the NCSL staff.
So I jumped ahead. I really apologize that Ms. Larson was going to talk about that. So I thought that had something to do with this.
Okay.
But so when we look at that distinction, or on, let's see, on, we have also differences, I'm trying to remember this, Ms. Stengel, Ms. James, and Ms. Fontaine have the same titles, make the same salary, but Ms. Doyle has been here 7 years, whereas James and Stengel have been here 4 years. So, you know, it's like hard for us when we see this to understand why there's such differences in the salaries.
Well, Madam Chair, it's a little misleading to look to make comparisons based on the years of Senate service alone and the titles alone. And the reason why that's going to be that's one factor, the total number of years. But I think if you look at people who might have the same job title and might have comparable numbers of years, you might find that one of them had served several years in a position that was in a lower range and then had been moved into a different position within the Senate.
I see.
So that person might not have been in the same range for the same number of years. Another factor is, you know, in the second example you used, one of those, the person who seems to be disadvantaged had been an employee of the Senate during the period of time when we had no promotions and no salary increases. So there are so many factors that fit into these determinations. And at this point, to be honest, that salary study is not going to be analyzing those differences.
Okay.
But that's something we're going to...
Maybe that's something we need to look at. Senator Sieben?
Secretary is off. Then I guess one challenge that I feel is you do good work of putting together the roster and asking us to approve it, or now we formally approve it, but we don't really as a committee understand or see what happens when, for instance, who gets a promotion and who doesn't. So maybe that's where some of my frustration is coming from, that the decisions that go into the varying levels of salary, we don't get any explanation of those. Like you mentioned earlier, that the new salaries compared to last year reflect people who got promotions or whatever. But without going through it individually, it's hard to know why a person would get a promotion or what the individual circumstances are. So I kept thinking that we would get this NCSL salary study that was going to look at individual, that each individual's years of service and compare it to what others in the Senate and to other similar job positions to help us adjust some of the divisions that we hear about from staff or others, that why there are these unfairnesses or inequities in the salary ranges. But it sounds like we're not going to get that from NCSL. So what do we... I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, but, like, how do we get at that issue then? What's the... And I really appreciate that you and Ms. Larson have worked so hard to develop job descriptions. That's certainly one aspect of it. But what's the longer-term plan then to try to adjust salaries? And I should say, when I say adjust salaries, I'm hoping that it will be we adjust salaries upwards for people that seem to have been here a long time, but their salary doesn't necessarily reflect that in all cases.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, you're right. This NCSL study is not going to address individual salary placements. That would be another step, and that would be something that will have to be done once we get these market numbers. That's going to be our first step. And it was always kind of presented as that's the basic information we have to work with to see if people who are in these ranges if the ranges are accurate for the responsibilities of the positions. So that was our first step in commissioning the study from NCSL. Where we take it from there, in the past, I had been a member of MAC when we did a couple of other NCSL studies, and when we would get the information from them, we as a MAC group would take a look at how to apply some of the findings of the NCSL study to individuals, taking into account, internal equity, how long people had been in those particular positions. I mean, it becomes very tricky to establish an appropriate salary for somebody who's been in one position and then another, and then you compare them to people in the same mm-hmm. range or the same job description who've been here varying amounts of time and maybe in different positions earlier on. So that is a challenge, and it's something we're going to have to spend some time, having a good rationale for what we do with salaries, and then being able to apply that to over 200, to 200 staff people.
So then, Ms. Zoff, Madam Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Thank you. I know it's extra work, but can you walk us through on the roster now some of the rationales for why some people receive promotions and is it because they've reached a certain number of years of service in that position, or is it because they've moved jobs, or
do examples maybe?
I can, Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, I can certainly give you some examples. On the first page, there is an individual who was promoted from an analyst 1 to an analyst 2. That would be Mr. Arneson. And the threshold, and I should step back, when we do what's called job family promotions, there's a whole list of criteria that people are expected to meet in order to qualify for one of these promotions. And I want to make it really clear that in the past, we have not just automatically promoted someone. Say, if you are an analyst 1 for 2 years, that's kind of the threshold for being eligible to be promoted to an analyst 2. But in addition to having been in that position for 2 years, we also have an expectation that the individual may be taking on a more complex assignment, or they certainly are able to do the duties of the analyst with a greater degree of independence and a greater degree of skill, something we often look for when we promote people from one stage in the job family to another is that they may be taking on additional responsibilities that are not required of someone in their first year or two on the job, but once they've become more accustomed to that job, we may give them additional responsibilities within the council and research and fiscal office. For example, I remember looking at people who made contributions to the Senate as a whole rather than just working on the committee that they're assigned to. So people develop relationships with members who ask them to give them a more detailed level of explanations. So we look for certainly a greater level of skill and independence, as well as just fitting that position for the right number of years.
And what about other job categories? Like, for instance, was there any...
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were there any salary adjustments in any of the LA positions in either the minority or the majority staff? And if so, then what triggers that change?
Ms. Soft.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, within the minority caucus, there were, I believe, 4 LAs. There were several LAs who were promoted from either LA2 to LA3, or there may have been some who were promoted from a 1 to a 2. I don't have that before. One went from a 3 to a 4. So it's various numbers. But again, mm-hmm. those are what we call the job families, so that when people have been serving in that position for a certain number of years, then they're able to, assuming that they operate with a greater degree of skill and independence and maybe take on some additional duties, they would be eligible for a promotion at that point.
So it's not necessarily based on their years of service, Madam Chair?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, the years of service is a threshold for a promotion, say, from an LA1 to an LA2, and I don't have the job family chart with me, but it's, I believe, maybe 3 years to make that level of promotion, possibly two. And each of these movements from one stage of the job family to another does have a certain number of years that have to be, that's the initial criteria. But then in addition to that, you know, I think we've made a point of saying we're not going to automatically promote people just because they've been here for X number of years.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you. Ms. Zoff, it looks like, just looking at the chart, if you compare their salary from last year to their current salary, there are a handful of people in the minority caucus who their salaries were adjusted. And then if you look under the committee staff for the similar type of people, for the majority, that same adjustment doesn't seem to be taking place, and I'm sure there's an explanation, but I just don't understand what it is.
excuse me.
Secretary Soft.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, yes, those were, as I recall, those were not specifically job family promotions, but they were intended to recognize taking on some additional responsibilities or duties within the same job description or job title.
Just to be clear, it is the MAC that decides who is there someone like the chief of staff within each caucus who makes recommendations within their particular category? Or what? I mean, I guess I'm finding it hard to believe that in the majority caucus there weren't staff who were taking on similar responsibilities, had reached the threshold of additional years of service, and that sort of thing. And I'm just not understanding why they're not getting the same recognition of a salary increase as others.
Secretary Soft.
And who makes that decision, I guess, is my question.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, some of these promotions were recommended by the leadership and did not necessarily go through the MAC.
Why are we doing
that? But, if members feel that there is some kind of a salary adjustment that needs to be made, I think there should be a process whereby they can, make that request, either members or individual staff members. So would that be appropriate to go to your caucus leader or to go to the MAC with yourself as chair of the MAC? Are you chairing the MAC?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure there is really a chair. You could certainly
and make a case.
Right.
That, yeah.
Right. Yes. Madam Chair, I would say that in the past, some years ago, there was a practice of individual senators making proposals.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As far as the minority caucus, I think part of it was that some of these positions, they were in much higher positions, but then as they went to the minority, they were placed in beginning legislative assistant positions, and so they had significant drops in salary. And so there was a conversation between both leaders to try to work through some of those issues. And related to that, I hope that we consider, I don't think that we do consider prior experience from the other body when we're looking at people that we recruit. And I think it puts the Senate at a competitive disadvantage with the other body and perhaps other agencies that may be recruiting people. And I hope moving forward we think about that, because if, say, the House and the Senate are both looking for an analyst or whatever the position is, and they have a lot of experience but it's not within the Senate, we can only offer them so much. And I think that's a mistake if we're, you know, we want to get the best and brightest here if we can. And so, but Senator Sieben, that's where some of that came from, at least on that minority caucus position.
Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, I'm not begrudging anybody for getting additional compensation, to make that clear. I just want to make sure that it's really hard to get your arms around what is the threshold for adjusting someone's salary up, whether it's you talk to the right people or you bring your concerns to the MAC or to your caucus leader. It's just kind of unclear. And from talking to staff, I think some staff will privately share that frustration that they don't know when they would get a salary adjustment or not. And so I was always under the impression that NCSL was going to help us with this in a more comprehensive manner. And now I'm just a little bit frustrated that that doesn't seem like that's going to be happening.
Well, maybe when Ms. Larson presents for us, we can ask more details about what we are going to get from NCSL. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And being spanking new to this, however, delved in personnel matters, you know, on the school board and this also as a business, but I'm having a hard time seeing the logic behind, in reference to what Senator Sieben is saying, track or to see groups or steps or lanes or something. That just, this is really hard for me to decipher from the standpoint of there is no logical understanding of how somebody makes what they're making. And it would almost be beneficial for me to see groupings, not individuals laid out, but groupings of here's the minimum, here's the maximum within this. You guys are shaking your head like this is already something I must have missed. It does exist?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'll just hold that until Ms. Larson talks then.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one follow-up, too, because I agree with Senator Sieben that we do need some sense of clear guidelines. When the DFL went from the majority to the minority, the other side made a decision not to reduce salaries more than 10%, just because we recognize people's lives are at stake. And so when the Republican then went from the majority to the minority, it was a much, much deeper cuts. And so that was where some of the negotiation went into. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Senator Sieben that it would be nice if we have some clearer guidelines about how we do some of this stuff.
I have a question about the sergeant's salaries on page 3, especially for Nick Thompson and Chris Stenzo and Kathy Warwick, considering all the work they do around here and the years they've been here. I'm just commenting that they seem low to me. And, you know, even if we compare them to our LA salaries, I think we should really be looking at those for possible equity adjustments, which we've talked about in the past. Maybe Mr. Lindquist can help us with that a little bit when he speaks about the temporaries. That didn't really require a response from you unless you want to.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, that is a function of the ranges and of the structure that we have for promotions within that area. For example, sergeants can be sergeants 1 or 2, mm-hmm. and there is no opportunity for them to be promoted into
sergeant
a 3 or something of that sort. So,
really leads me to my other question, is why we have LA 1, 2, 3, 4, but it's only CAs 1 and 2, council analysts 1, 2, 3. Now you're telling me sergeants 1, 2. No, why don't we have 4 steps for all classes? Because then you could make those upward adjustments.
Madam Chair, that would certainly be something we could take a look at in terms of, adding on to the ranges. Particularly, I've certainly always felt it was in the Senate's best interest to encourage longevity. We're very fortunate to have so many staff who are willing and able to stay, and in my opinion, it's very nice to be able to, give them the incentive to stay in place and to develop greater understanding and to be helpful to other staff people when we bring in new staff people. So that is certainly a consideration.
Well, and as members, as we look at facing a workforce shortage, that people are, salaries are starting to go up now in the private sector, and we do need to be competitive as well as reward kind of loyalty, that people really learn the lay of the land here, that we want to keep them on.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the purpose of this committee is to provide what to whom and who has final decisions on how salaries are made, because I'm looking at two same salaries, and maybe having the grid would stop me from asking these questions that are, you know, seem to be pretty simple if those of you would just bear with me. For example, a legislative assistant 2 salary last year at $38,063, legislative assistant 2 salary last year at $38,063 is still current. The other one, they have same years, same identities. That one is making now $39,966. And without seeing, you know, without seeing a system in place that gives reason to do it, I would have to question, why is that just different?
And if we do give credit to other experience, that would be helpful to know, I think. I mean, I don't know if we do. I think Senator Gazalka's point about, and we should have that on the chart if we did change that so people would understand that, you know, if you served in the House for 4 years, you've been in the Senate for 4 years, maybe you make more money than if you served in the Senate for 4 years.
So, Madam Chair.
But I don't know that we give credit for House experience. Secretary Saw.
Madam Chair and members, we did have a process in place for some years where we applied what was then called the Wolf Formula, in honor of the person who devised the formula, to Senate salaries for people coming into Senate service, so that we gave credit for individuals who came to the Senate with experience either in the House or in other state government or in local governments. It was limited to people with government experience. We didn't give extra recognition for private sector, and that's a whole different discussion. But we had that in place for some years, and that might explain some of the differences in salary levels if you were an individual who was hired here during the time when we were implementing the Wolf Formula, and you did get some extra credit as you came into your Senate service. That would continue to be reflected in your salary now. However, when the Senate budget, took a hit during the downturn of the economy and of the state budget, we stopped giving any kind of salary increases to Senate staff for several years. And during that period of time, it seemed most reasonable to suspend the Wolf Formula, because had we left that in place, we would have continued to be giving people credit for service that they were performing elsewhere, whereas people who had been working at this same job in the Senate for several years weren't getting any kind of increases. So as a result of the salary freeze for those several years, we stopped applying that formula.
And we created some compression then.
Yes, well, yes, Madam Chair.
And Secretary Zoff, didn't we also last year have a situation where we really wanted to raise the incoming salaries because we weren't being, again, competitive with those beginning salaries?
Madam Chair, we have not raised them for a couple of years. We haven't raised the ranges. And that was done, I think, there were a couple of thoughts that went into that. One is we were interested, at the time we knew we were looking toward having a salary study, and we felt maybe it made more sense to wait until we got the results of the study before we'd automatically just add on an extra percentage. And the other was that this was a way to accommodate people who had started, say, during the current year, to give them, for example, the 3% above the starting range to recognize their year of service, whereas if we had increased the range at the same time, we'd be bringing new people into the same position at the same salary.
Right.
So we're trying to balance out those considerations when we look at the start of the range. But clearly haven't gone a couple of years without increasing the bottom of the range. you know, I would be surprised if the NCSL study didn't come in and say we need to get moving there so we're not at a competitive disadvantage.
In the lower range, people can be very close in terms of, you know, less than $1,000 in difference, even though someone's been here more years, because for that reason, because you're getting a lot of compression. I think I have some other questions, but I can maybe send those to you in a memo. So, because we really want to be out of here by 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Does anyone have any more questions about the regular roster? Can we go ahead and have a motion to approve that? Any more questions? Somebody want to make a motion to approve the regular roster?
So moved.
Permanent roster. Okay, the motion by Senator Hoffman is to approve the permanent roster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, let's go and look at the temporary roster. Senator Secretary Zoft.
Madam Chair, I left with you, I think, some... I don't know if you've handed those out to the members.
Are there more copies in here?
Yes.
Oh, it's just one page?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
At the end of the Rules Committee last time, Senator Pappas had mentioned that she was interested particularly in the temps. And so our records are not entirely easy to compare from year to year, but I did some research on the level of staffing that we had for permanent and temporary staff going back into the 80s and then jumping ahead to the year 2000. And I think this provides a pretty clear picture of the direction that we've been going in terms of staff. And particularly... I think you'll see some very noticeable changes on that list with respect to the level of pages that were hired for the Senate. If you go back to the year 2000, not really all that long ago, we had 51 pages. Pages at that point were assigned to each of the committees of the Senate, and then there was an additional pool of 17 pages who staffed the floor sessions and were available to provide general assistance to members as well. And you'll see that those numbers have come down. If you go to 2004, again, during a budget problem for the Senate, there was an effort at that point to economize by keeping a very, very low level of temporary employees. So in 2004, we had no pages, and I am told that we used interns for providing assistance in the committees and on the floor. Then we reverted to hiring more pages. If you come down to 2012, we began to, instead of staffing individual committees with a page for each, we began the use of having a very small pool of pages, and we've continued that to this day. Most of the pages that we've had the last several years have been assigned to staff one of the committee hearing rooms, and this seems to me to have been a very efficient use of the pages. They are available. They're assigned to a particular room. They handle the committee hearings that occur in that room. They're also available to back each other up if there's a particularly busy hearing or a hearing where there's expected to be a tremendous number of amendments or documents or a large crowd. They may have two pages assigned to a room. There are also a couple of pages who are in the SOB and then another one who's assigned to the Capital Investment Committee. So we've really reduced the number of pages. I have to say they've really done a remarkable job of being very flexible and very cheerful and helpful to people. They'll, do whatever they need to do to keep the committees moving smoothly. They start the tapes. They hand out documents. And they're just very generally helpful to people within the committee rooms.
And Ms. Zoff, then, who supervises the pages?
Madam Chair, that's Colleen Pacheco.
And are they available? Are they now consistent? I know committees are meeting pretty frequently now. So are they consistently busy, or is there any kind of downtime when, you know, members might make use of their services?
Madam Chair, if there is downtime that you can count on, say, during a Friday when there are no committee meetings, I think they'd certainly be very helpful and very willing to help with other duties. But during, I think, the other 4 days when the committees are going pretty nonstop, they're very busy.
Okay. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Zoff, can you give me a breakdown of the 202 permanent staff people, Democrat, Republican, nonpartisan? Just so I have a sense of that.
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, I don't have those numbers with me, but I can send that to you.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Senator Gazelka.
Ms. Zoff, if you can let me know how that changed from, say, 2011 or 12, you know, how that number changed.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair.
Any more? Is there anyone else who has any more questions about the temporary roster?
Madam.
Yes, Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair, Secretary Zoff, could you please explain from your understanding at what point the intern supplement that we used to provide to interns went away? And I assume it was because of budget reasons, but has there been any discussion by the MAC to bring back a supplement for the interns who work in members' offices?
Senator Zoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, you're right. The intern stipend did go away because of budget concerns several years ago. And as far as I know, there hasn't been any discussion about changing that policy.
Senator Sieben.
Madam Chair and Secretary Zoff, could you please work on that and put forward a proposal for next session to bring back a modest stipend for the interns, how much it would cost for something that for this subcommittee to consider? I personally feel like the interns are really invaluable to members, and to not even give them, I think it used to be like
$300
or something.
Oh, we each got $200 a month for however many interns we had. So if you had one, if you had two, you just got $200 a month. Mm-hmm. And there was a housing supplement for a while, too, for interns. Mm-hmm. That was, I've been around a long time, so that was a few years ago. But to at least cover their parking, their bus fare, you know, something.
Yeah. Right. I really think that that's something that we need to do again. And so if the MAC could put together a proposal to bring that back, or at least some different options for different levels of whether it's per intern or per senator, the senator gets a set amount for a year to apply to however they want to divide it. I don't have any real great ideas.
Senator Gazelka.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I think it went out in 2012, and I had it 1 year and didn't have it 1 year. And I thought, in addition to the benefit to us, we are starting somebody off in a, you know, potential direction that's positive for them, looks good on their resume. I mean, it was a win for us, but certainly it was a win for them, too.
Members, I just want to move us along. I just have a question about the use of technology. We certainly have reduced the number of pages on the floor by the use of technology, because we have very few now because we have very little paperwork going on the floor. Members often go up and get their own. Mm-hmm. Are there any other I don't know if you can – you probably can't answer this off the top of your head, but I think it'd be a good idea to look at, is there a way we can use technology in our systems – to also make things go more efficiently? And maybe we all could kind of think of examples of where that could happen. You know, scanning documents, transferring documents electronically instead of by messengers. You know, just, you know, the Senate is usually a place where this is the way we've always done it. And maybe with the new building and new the changes that are going on here, it would be a good time, especially when we're not going to be so convenient to the Senate. We're going to be in the new Senate office building, to think about how we can use technology more in our internal workings.
Madam Chair, I think as you see, the reduction in the number of temps in general is a reflection of the fact that we simply don't move as much paper as we used to. And so we're able to have far fewer people on the staff who are involved in that process. But we have started some discussions. We're trying to look at, say, for example, with the desk staff, what would be the process to someday go in the direction of having even less paper than we have now? Mm-hmm. I think the Senate's been kind of a pioneer in terms of the way it operates on the floor without having, you know, the old bill folders that we used to have and without having all the paper amendments. So I do think we've come quite a long distance in that direction. But, the fact is we still do rely on the bills are in paper, and they are, you know, physically signed and stamped, and every time there's an action on them, those documents have to be moved. And, you know, to think ahead to how someday that's maybe not going to be the case is going to take a lot of steps. And certainly if, for example, we have a session in a temporary chamber, I think that's going to be another whole kind of a conceptual leap forward as we think about how things are going to be different from the way they've been before. So I think we are evolving in that direction, but it's going to take some more time.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree that the reduction of paperwork is something that we should really strive to. I didn't understand a lot of freshmen, too, the first year we were here. There was, it's like the paper fairy showed up underneath our desk, and all these engrossments that didn't need signatures on them were there. And I thought, you know, I would rather see this stuff electronically. And that stuff went right into the recycling bin. So it was a waste of money and a waste of time and the paper. So anything we can do to reduce that, I agree with the fact that the signature stuff we can never get away from, but some of that other stuff, it's electronically available and it's there. So
I did have a question about for Secretary Zoft, who I'm not sure what her final retirement date is, but certainly the search for a new secretary, when should we be embarking on that search?
Madam Chair, I don't know that I'm ready to commit to anything right now.
Okay. So. All right. Thanks. Then could we have thank you very much. I had invited Mr. Lindquist here, if there's no questions for Ms. Zoft, to tell us a little bit about the sergeant's office. We had a long talk, though, in my office, and we don't have time to repeat that talk. So, Mr. Lindquist, that took much longer than I thought. Perhaps if anyone has any questions about the sergeant's office or the use of temporary employees, since we talked about the pages, but we haven't talked about the sergeants, then this is your opportunity to ask.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, Sven Lindquist, Sergeant at Arms, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today about the temporary staffing levels of the sergeant's office. As you can see by the temporary roster, one-third of those folks listed are direct reports to my office. So in the essence of time, rather than me talking, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Maybe just a brief statement. The workload of the sergeant's office is kind of twofold. Number one, it's all the behind-the-scenes things around this place that keep things going, things that never make the front page, hopefully, and nobody really knows that we're involved when things go well and we do our job before a meeting or during a meeting. The other piece that goes on with the Sergeant-at-Arms office is a direct response to the activities of you and your colleagues, the things that bring crowds to the Capitol, things that populate these hearing rooms. And you may be doing a very quiet job in a less attended meeting like this today, but across the hall in 107, there could be several dozen or hundred people attempting to attend and be seated and whatnot. Those are the capacities that my office tends to be very heavily involved in. This session, for those of you, I think everybody in the room has been around for quite some time, is a very unique session. And with about 70% of the Capitol building being closed down for public accommodation and use, the rotunda, the front steps, the Great Hall, the North Hall out here, in limited, unattended fashion, many of the crowds have not come to the Capitol for session 16. I'm thankful that we've only had to ticket one meeting thus far this session, and to that end would have no overflow seating opportunity even if we had had the need. It just doesn't exist in this remodeling state. Next session, session 16, will again be a very unique and different opportunity for us in this new building with a temporary Senate chamber and also only a couple hearing rooms, as I understand. That will provide challenges. And then when we move back into this building, renovated for the 17 session, there'll be five committee hearing rooms here. There'll be three in the new building. For the first time at a Capitol Commission preservation oversight meeting a couple weeks ago, I heard that for the 2017 session, parts of the Capitol building may not be finished. I'm not really quite sure what that means, but third floor was mentioned, which gives me question about access to House and Senate galleries. The north floor, north quarter of first floor, which is this area that we're in, if this isn't occupiable, that will change the process for the House. And then also ground floor below us was listed, which is the area that's slated for Secretary of the Senate office desk staff, the Senate Council temporary space, Fiscal Services office, and my office. So as we go through this process, we continue to face challenges. Session 15 may be unique, 16 will be different, and I'm not so sure that we'll be back to normal in 17, if there ever will be such a thing as a normal session, again, as we all knew before we started tearing this place apart. So happy to answer any questions, if I might.
Okay, I think I got all my questions answered when we had our meeting. So, Senator Hoffman?
Madam Chair, I just want to, again, being a freshman, these guys are great ambassadors to what this institution's about. And you see them putting paintings up to making sure that the rooms are safe, to making sure that people get access to places. And I just think that kudos and hats off to the sergeant and the work that they're doing here in this Capitol. And they're getting paid nothing, and we should, you know.
And Mr. Lindquist talked to me actually about the varied duties that the sergeants have so that we haven't had to contract with admin to take care of. Do you want to give some examples of that?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, I think one of the things that has been very helpful is over the years the sergeant complement that has come together that works for me presently have taken on very, very, very many varied tasks. Stonework, woodwork, painting, picture hanging have literally saved the Senate probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. In the minority office areas and in the old hearing room areas, chair rail was installed. I think everybody has noticed that over in the state office building. Every time a chair nicked the wall, they really didn't even have to measure when they put up the chair rail. But if you can imagine in the bowels of this building, all that chair rail was cut and stained and varnished and installed, and it cut down on our painting, which was, you know, many hundreds of dollars every time we had to paint one or all the walls in one of those offices over in the office building. It has been a very close-knit group and a good group that has worked well together for a very long time. And maybe this is a proper time to put this committee on notice as you go about budgeting and looking toward the future. But I'm guessing with nine sergeants, two parking marshals, I'm not so sure that the parking marshals will continue with the parking situation, with the underground garage parking, with the new building. But that would – so those 11 positions – to cover two offices, five hearing rooms in this building, three over there, and a Senate chamber, it's possible, depending upon how you look at it, that 9 or 11 will be a little light in that complement as we move into 17. So thank you, Senator Hoffman, for your comments. And it's a great group to work with, and it's been my pleasure to be associated with them for these many years.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the temporary roster?
So moved.
Okay, Senator Hoffman moves that the subcommittee recommend the temporary roster, and I forgot to say earlier, and it'd be referred to the full Rules Committee. So that should be incorporated into the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. And let's have a quick update from Ms. Larson, who it's been delightful to have her with us the last couple years.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
And looking forward to a little insight into what we've talked about what the NCSL study will not do, but let's hear a little bit more about what it will do.
Sure. I spoke with NCSL yesterday to ask them about a date that they thought that they were going to be able to get our study to us, and it looks like as of yesterday it'll be around the first week in April. What we asked NCSL to do initially was to help us benchmark our salary ranges. We gave them the salary range documents that we have for all the levels, our grade levels, as well as Secretary Zoff stated, rewrote 100 job descriptions to make them current and accurate. And we did this with the help of all the managers who supervise those positions, as well as some of the staff if their managers weren't exactly sure what it was in particular that they were doing at the time. And so that went to NCSL, and at this time they are doing their study, again, to benchmark our jobs, to put a range together for us to start the process moving forward.
What does that mean, to benchmark our salary range documents?
To determine where we should be, mm-hmm. as opposed to where we are. From my perspective, from the HR perspective, I think we do have positions that are undervalued, and we may have positions that are right in the range, and we may have positions that are overvalued. And I'm not in a position or an expert in that field, and mm-hmm. so that's why we commence NCSL to do that study for us.
And are they going to be comparing us to other states, or comparing us to the private sector or other governmental salary ranges?
Madam Chair, they're doing all of that.
All of that?
Yes.
So it's a market study.
Correct.
Ms. Soft said, yeah. Senator Sieben?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Larson, as a member of the MAC, and since you're the HR director, prior to this going to the full Rules Committee, could you give us an explanation of everybody who received a salary supplement and why? An explanation? It looks like there's just a handful of people, but I think that that might help us as a committee start to understand, besides just getting a couple examples, why there were the adjustments.
I don't,
Senator Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair and Senator Sieben, I don't know that I can give you any more detail than what Secretary Zoff has given you. There are step progressions, as she has stated, and in those step progressions, there are years of service that need to be met, but that's just the first criteria before being able to potentially get that promotion. The promotion list will go out to any supervisor who has somebody on that promotional grid. They will put together a two-page document indicating what their person has, one, met the years of service, two, what they've accomplished, what their value has been over the course of their employment, and then that will be passed out in the MAC meeting, with which the entire MAC staff will review that information and then make a decision at that time if the promotion should go through. And not everyone will get a promotion just based upon meeting that years of service. They have to be able to meet the skill set of that position and have taken on additional responsibility.
I think that's what Senator Sieben is looking for. Like, I'm just thinking of, for example, on page 4, we have two adjustments for two researchers in majority research, and it was pretty significant, $11,000, and they hadn't worked here that long, but I see that it says researcher 2. So maybe it was an adjustment, it was a promotion from researcher 1 to researcher 2. So I think that's all we're looking for, is this adjustment was made because it was a promotion.
Yes, and I'm sorry, I didn't have the correct roster, so forgive me, I had to borrow it from Secretary Zoff. When we do a promotion, we bring people up into the minimum of the next salary range. If that minimum is lower than 5% per range, they'll get a 5% increase. If it's a two-step range, let's just say they're in a level 1 and they're going into a researcher 2, depending on, I don't have the grade levels in front of me, but mm-hmm. let's just say it's a two-step level, they will get then a 10% pay increase, or to the minimum of that range, whichever is greater. I'm sorry, my math isn't, but whatever one, if 10% is greater than the minimum, they would get the 10%.
I think it would just be helpful, Madam Chair, and Ms. Larson, I just think it would be helpful to have, for the people who did get, you don't have to give us the whole explanation.
Okay.
But just like they were eligible for a promotion, or they changed job classification, or what the the fundamental reason why they're getting the promotion is.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand still, and I'm sure there's a process, but even after all this discussion, I don't understand why some people are getting them and others aren't. It's not that anyone shouldn't be getting them. It's that why others are not. And that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around. And I'm not comfortable. That's why I voted against the approving the regular roster, because we as the senators are approving the individual salaries for members. And if we're not, if I don't understand the real rationale for why someone's not getting a salary increase, for instance, I feel like it's incumbent on me as a senator to help understand that. So that's why I'm asking for more information.
And I think the rules need to be fair for everyone. And I think that in past years, I won't say it's going on now, individual senators would advocate for their staff. And if you're not the kind of person who does that, then, you know, we don't want the staff to suffer because the senator's not advocating for them because they don't realize that that's part of what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Madam Chair, thank you. And that might also help explain why there's some inconsistencies in the methodology on how salaries are come to be. And that, I think for me, I'd like to see that grid or that logic model that's in place that with explanation on why they picked that and what other models that might be out there to look at. But that'll be helpful for me as well.
And when we sometimes have seen some glaring inconsistencies, some people have said, well, we need to make an equity adjustment here because there are additional responsibilities or there are additional factors to consider. And then that can create other inequities. So, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Senator Stephen and Senator Hoffman, with respect to the two that you were speaking of, those particular people, I placed an ad for Mary Pedersen and Jennifer Orr. You're asking about the $10,000 jump, roughly. I placed an ad for these positions out of this majority research, and that went out to the entire staff, as well as posted publicly. And these particular people applied for the position and were hired. So at one point, I believe they were LA1s, and moved into the researcher 2 position.
That makes sense.
That information would be helpful.
Yeah.
Is there a researcher 1 position? I don't see anybody with that category now.
We don't have a researcher 1 position, no, Madam Chair.
Okay, so that goes back to this step thing, is why some people only have 2 steps, some have 3, some have 4. You know, I think there should be some more consistency there.
And that's exactly.
And that also helps us move people through the process, like with the sergeants.
And, Madam Chair, that's exactly why we enlisted NCSL to help us, making a better equity benchmark for, we're hoping, we don't have the study back, but that was some of our concerns. Do we have a researcher 1 position that we don't utilize at all? Do we have a researcher 3 position? Mm-hmm. And so they're helping us with that.
Oh, that'll be great.
Right.
Good. Okay, any other questions? And are there any other issues that members of the subcommittee who are talking to each other? Senator Hoffman, Senator Sieben, we're going to adjourn here, but are there any other issues that you would like the subcommittee to look at in the future? If there are, please let me know. You know, I think certainly an issue my office has been very interested in is training and for our personnel, and that's something we also could discuss and consider.
Thank you.
Okay. Then if there's nothing more to come before the subcommittee, then thank you all very much, and the meeting is adjourned.
Elections in too?
Yeah.
That's funny.